I've just had three clients saying to me, Linda, I played 8 rounds of golf in Scotland, foursomes. We kept beating the other teams and we ended up in the final and we beat them. He does Pilates with me every week. Okay. He wasn't tired. The stories I get is what gets the men to understand Pilates. Not just the fact that Pilates is really good for your posture, it's really good. All those things doesn't really resonate with the men I work with. But when it comes to the men I work with and the men I've worked with in the past, is that I managed to get them to understand Pilates because I explained to them what it will give them. Okay? Winning something or getting better at it or reducing the pain they feel.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast with me, Chris Lynch, your host and founder of GYH. I hope the year is off to a great start for you, and where your golf is concerned, you are using this off-season to plan for the season ahead and making sure that you approach your game intentionally and with purpose. And to that end, actually, if you missed our last episode with Neil Matthews entitled From Guesswork to Game Plan, I really do suggest you head over to our YouTube channel to give that episode a watch, because it really is filled with a lot of great insight on exactly that subject. And I'm sure watching and listening to Neil will help you forge a plan for your game and help you craft your goals for the season ahead. Staying on the theme of game improvement for just a second and using that as a segue to introduce today's guest, Linda Segerstam, she is very much also someone who can help you sharpen up your game and achieve better results on the course, but doing so in a way, an alternative way, which many of you watching this on YouTube or listening on audio on any of your favorite podcast platforms, she is helping you in a way that you may not have previously considered or actually have been aware of. So as a golf Pilates instructor, as a specialist in the field of Pilates, Linda is helping golfers to improve their core strength and their overall mobility to in turn drive optimal performance and perhaps crucially feel better, to have more energy during and after rounds of golf. And as we've explored before on this podcast, actually, holistic practices like yoga or Pilates, which it turns out derives from yoga, as Linda educated me during this conversation, these kinds of practices are becoming more and more trusted and mainstream within the world of golf. We recently, for example, heard Tommy Fleetwood, for instance, talk about successfully using meditation to help him win on the DP World Tour. And then in recent years, and as Linda points out, you've got legends of the game like Colin Montgomery talking about how Pilates specifically has helped him to stay flexible and supple in his joints in the later years of his career. So there's so much evidence, anecdotal stories and proof that this stuff really does work. And on that point of stories and success stories, that soundbite that you've just heard from Linda is a perfect example of some of those successes that she has enjoyed working with her clients. And as always, I try in this podcast to bring you insights and practical tips and resources which will help you to become a happier and healthier version of yourself, both on and off the golf course. Linda is someone I met last year at the International Congress on Golf and Health. And so with that, suffice it to say, she is someone who knows her stuff. She's been in and around the golf industry for many years now. As you'll hear, she worked for Callaway in their European head office for many years. So she knows golf. She knows how golfers think, what motivates them. But certainly now, in her current Pilates role, how she can get the best out of you using Pilates as that key enabler. So without any further ado, let's tee this one off and jump into the conversation. Linda, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you.
And welcome to the studio. This is only the second time, I think, if memory serves me right, that we have had a guest in our home studio here in Brecon, Mid Wales. So
Thank you, first of all, genuinely, for making the effort to come here, because it's normally me going to my guests. But I think hopefully I've not, what's the word I'm looking for, inconvenienced you too much, because it sounds like you've kind of, you had a good trip so far. You've been at Saint-Pierre, right?
Yes, we arrived to Saint-Pierre. It was lovely this morning. I can hear the rain smattering on the window above us right now. But yeah, it's been lovely coming into Wales. So thank you for the invitation.
Great to have you on. And you are, you know, another one of those guests that we've had on who I had the pleasure of getting to know or meeting at the Third International Congress of Golf and Health in Edinburgh earlier this year. Yeah. I always say that out loud and I think that sounds so fancy, doesn't it?
It does, like, sound the, very fancy.
International
long title
Congress.
Too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh. How did you find that?
I think it's a very good forum for us industry professionals to meet up. And especially, I think for me, I don't get to meet these people very often. And it's good to hear about what is researched about when it comes to health around golf, and you know, both the technical side of it with the doctors, and also the things that maybe is a bit more, you know, close to what I'm doing too. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. Always meet nice people like yourself. So it's good.
Thank you. And it was something you said there about the research, right? So I think it was spoken about how in when kind of industry professionals come together, especially a lot of people who are kind of in clinical roles or in health related roles, we can speak about our work in quite almost like, this is my word, like alienating terms to the general public, because you know, so I just am curious, I don't want to skip ahead because we'll obviously get into talking in more depth about your Pilates work in golf, but like how are you approaching that in terms of making sure that like you're kind of getting golf and health related messaging across to your clients in a way that actually makes sense to them, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to have a different language to clients, as we know, with especially if you talk to golfers about how they learn from their pros.
Yeah.
If they spend an hour with a pro, they probably won't remember more than a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And we can easily overload clients and members of the public. So sometimes it's nice to meet people in these congress, you know, at the congress, so you can discuss it at the level that we should be discussing it, mm-hmm. so that we have more of the background. Your language, I think, with clients, I don't want to say dumbed down because it's not a nice word, but we have to take it down so they can remember it. And those that feel like, okay, I want to know more, we have the technical, you know, people who want to know more, then you can fill up a little bit more with the language of exactly what's going on, you know, in joints and muscles and all that. But yeah, I think we all learn differently and we forget very easily.
Yeah, I love that point, actually, because one of the best managers or leaders I've ever worked for, she, this was in the job that I'm now leaving behind to make this a full-time endeavor, but
well done.
Thank you, appreciate it. Exciting and nerve-wracking in equal measure, I think I said to you, but she had a management consulting background, and you know, we were working together in learning and development. She made that kind of similar point that you just made, which is when you're doing a presentation, which for example is quite full of information, you kind of have to always keep in mind that the audience, our brain will only probably remember like 20 to 30% at best of, so there's something there about the importance of making your message very clear, so that someone's taking away the right thing or the thing that you really, really want. Because if you want them to remember anything, it's this one or two things, right?
So. Yeah. So it's like, you know, anything with, like, we look at products that we remember is the simple language that is getting into our brains. Like, some of the big companies do this a lot, where they have just maybe a color, maybe one logo, and we'll remember it because we can see it all the time. So yeah, no, I definitely think there is a technique and that we need to learn so that we give people just enough, and then they can let us know when they want to learn more. But I think it's nice to have technical skills too. So, which is why we said it's important to meet people that can talk the technical language for us.
Yeah, exactly.
To keep it fresh in our mind.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think we can all complement each other, can't we? Because I think, like you say, we can take the technical knowledge from these highly specialized, highly clever, you know, sort of scientific people, and then take it out into the world and hopefully you know, take it to our clients or whatever and put it across them in that way. So who is Linda Segerström?
Linda Segerström is born in Finland in a very nice Swedish-speaking town called Jakobstad. And it's a place where...
A Swedish-speaking town in Finland.
So we're already a small minority in the country. So I think when you come from a place like that, you become very entrepreneurial. I think most of the people I know will have two or three things going on, except, you know, for the main job that they do. And my family is no different to that. So I've always had a few projects on the go.
Well, what makes that the case though? Why are people so inherently...
It's a harbour town as well. So I think the influence of people coming into the town, there's businesses there, there's yacht companies, there's a lot of metal work, there's a lot of things going on. And now with technology, Finland is high on the list for coming up with new ideas. So I think coming from that region has really made me be not afraid of change, which is another thing I can talk about more. But so my background is music. Because I grew up in a very musical family. My dad was a conductor as well as running a golf shop. Then he decided he was going to start playing golf at 25 when he couldn't do any more javelin and running and boxing because of his knees. And then he decided with my mum to found a few golf courses. So from there, the path just went into the golf industry for me and my sisters. So we played golf from a very young age. It sounds very luxurious now, but Dad actually built a golf course for us. So in Finland, you have a summer house and you have a townhouse. So he built a golf course around our summer house by the sea. And that's where I grew up. For me, golf was like cycling. And I realize now as an adult, it was very, you know, it's very nice to have your own golf course. So we used to have competitions there. I remember Dad running around with this mechanical lawnmower and just cutting and fixing things. And we had six holes and it was, yeah, a nice way to start my golf career.
That's brilliant. Yeah. That's very, very cool. We were briefly talking on the way in here about... So the nine-hole, is one of those golf courses you're referring to, a nine-hole course?
Yes.
And it's a family-owned, yeah.
Yeah, my dad is now in his 80s. My mum and dad work at the golf course still, and I think it's a great way to keep your brain fresh. So we talk about golf being great for anyone who's retired. It's just amazing. I can see the difference in them compared to people who don't play golf, and it's just immense. Yeah. It keeps their brain fresh. He's doing the competition still. You know, do what he can. I mean, some things they've had to let other people do. But, you know, we've always been part of it. So, yeah, I know when I get to that age, I will want to play golf. Definitely.
Nice. What's the name of that particular nine-hole
course? The golf course is called Remsen Golf Club.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll put it in the show notes. We'll put a link in. And yeah. If any of my viewers or listeners ever want
to... Come to Finland.
Go to Finland and check it out. We would love to. You know, saying to Lewis, our producer, just... I was telling you and a sort of a shameless plug to my viewers to check out Nine is Fine, which there'll be certainly by the time I think this episode goes out, we'll have done a few episodes of that. But yeah, maybe one day.
Yeah.
We'll take Nine is Fine for its first overseas trip to Finland.
24-hour daylight in the summer.
Really?
Yes. June, there's no night.
Okay, I'm just seeing a special Nine is Fine feature. How many holes can you get in?
There we go.
How many loops of nine can you do in 24 hours?
Yeah, and then you've got the saunas, the dipping, you've got the food, you've got everything. So yeah, you should come.
Okay, yeah. Amazing. Right, well, we need to make it happen then. So at that point where your dad introduced you into golf through his endeavours in golf, how has your kind of golf life or journey sort of developed since then? Because I mean, you know, I guess you love golf, playing it, but also you've developed a career in and around golf as well, right?
Yeah, so. I think also there, you know, my parents really instilled this in me to help others to play golf. So I always, in my teens, when I was still around the area, I used to teach golf. And that feeling of being able to help others to find out how to do this sport that I love has been really like set the platform for everything else I've done in life. I moved to England in the 90s and I did a lot of other things. But golf always followed me. I probably didn't play as much golf as I wanted to in my 20s because it wasn't really something I could do when I was in London as a student. But as soon as I could, and I did a lot of other things, of course, and then I suddenly found an advert in Evening Standard asking for people to join Callaway Golf in their head office. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where I started my career in the golf industry in the UK. Mm-hmm. So I joined Callaway, spent 11 years there, and played a lot of golf too. It was nice, and met a lot of people in the golf industry. The golf industry is small in the UK. You probably don't realize, but people move around. So the people I used to work with now work in very good jobs in the golf industry. So we are a close-knit family. I just met somebody in the hotel in St. Pierre that I used to work with.
No way.
Isn't that crazy?
Such a small world. And it just proves it, right?
Yeah. So, he lived in Scotland. He is now working around the area. And he's like, whoa, I can't believe it. And so for me, it's the connection with the people has kept me in the golf industry and the fact that I really love it.
Yeah.
And the teaching of it to others.
Just touching on briefly, what do you love most about the game of golf? What does it mean to you? What does it do for you?
I could say putting, but that might be a little bit light on the surface. I used to love to putt.
Not really, because it's probably my favorite part of the game. Probably because it's one of my strengths, but you know.
I've had so many putters, and it sounds a bit silly maybe, but I used to love long putts. And this is all the way from being a very small child up to my teens and to now. I just love putting. I love the fact that you can go outside and try to challenge yourself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's nice to just go and play by yourself too. I love the competing side of it. I used to compete a lot when I was younger. Played probably twice a week competitions. And unfortunately, then in my 20s, my shoulder gave up a bit. So I had to start looking at things to help me out to be able to play golf. So when I came to the UK in the 90s, I started doing Pilates, and that's how Pilates came into my life. I didn't get Pilates. I thought it was painful, but that's because I came from a body that was in pain, right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't understand that Pilates could help me at that point.
Did
that
you
came
know
much later.
What it was at that time?
I knew what it was. I remember it was part of my gym. Like they had sessions in the gym. I was lucky because already from the start, I had really good teachers, but they were teaching massive classes, like 25, 30 people in a room. And Pilates for me back then was more like, okay, I need to do this, but I didn't really get it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's how I touched on Pilates. And then I continued working in London. I did a photography course for 4 years, which is amazing. So I've used that now in later on when I became Pilates instructor, I had to film stuff myself. So that was really useful. So, and then, you know, when I started doing more Pilates, I understood that, okay, it's actually making a difference. Still didn't get it for my torso though, which is the most important part of Pilates, is trying to understand your core. It was more the movements I got. There's a lot of exercises, but I didn't get it. That came much, much later.
Okay. Mm. This is a great time then to speak to the viewer, the listener, about what's Pilates. Because there will be people watching or listening who may have heard of it and know very little about it, or may have never heard of it. So what is it?
The simplest way I try to describe it is that you're trying to get your joints to align perfectly for your body to be in least effort, in the least amount of effort to stand upright or do any movement that you're doing.
Okay.
Because we want joint alignment for the joints not to be overworking. Makes sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But golf leans our body forward, which means we're already using gravity. So we need to then learn how to use certain muscles in our torso, which is why the core, which is your deep abdominal muscles and your pelvic floor, has to be supporting even more because of the gravitational pull. So Pilates is a mix of exercises that helps you understand your joint alignment, gives you better posture, and then you figure out how to use your muscles with the timing of the front and back of the body.
Love it. Great explanation. Mm-hmm. Makes total sense to me. You know, I reflect on how, I was telling you this already, but Kate Floss, based in Germany, she's a yoga teacher, brought, you know, so she's kind of combined, she's found yoga extremely, she was a previous podcast guest and she found it very useful for her golf personally, but then she's now making a business out of that and sort of doing retreats and stuff and putting yoga within that. Now, I asked her a question, which I think I'm going to ask you sort of similarly is, guys, generally speaking, can be, I can't think of the word, maybe cynical or dismissive or insecure or a whole bunch of things as it relates to stuff they don't understand. What are you saying to the guys out there to get them off the fence and just go give Pilates a go?
Yeah, it's always been a bit of a bit of an obstacle for men to understand it, just because Pilates was
I'm glad to hear that, so that I'm not generalizing offending it, you know. So
because I think women like to be in groups. If you look at the academies we have in golf as well, women like to learn in groups. Maybe not so much a male thing, but I think I remember talking to one of the key head of training for PGA. This is many years ago when I first started, and he was like, "Okay, we tried Pilates before, but they didn't really get it." So I asked him to put it into the PGA training. And at that point, this is now maybe 7-8 years ago at least. And I think when it comes to men and understanding Pilates, if you tell somebody, I've just had three clients saying to me, Linda, I played 8 rounds of golf in Scotland, foursomes. We kept beating the other teams and we ended up in the final and we beat them. He does Pilates with me every week. Okay. He wasn't tired. He said, yeah, I'm fine. I was fine. He's in his 60s. The stories I get is what gets the men to understand Pilates. Not just the fact that Pilates is really good for your posture, it's really good. All those things doesn't really resonate with the men I work with, I found. So me just saying, okay, this person has done this Pilates routine, whatever exercise it is, and they've achieved something that made them better at their golf game without pain. Being able to just compete and win. Mental focus as well is part of Pilates. Also part of yoga, which is where we touch back on yoga. Pilates has got yoga exercises in the Pilates routines.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
So, because it was based,
so there is a close relationship between them.
Completely.
Yeah.
And you can do them in different ways, both of them. So they are interlinked. It's just a slight different focus.
Interesting.
But when it comes to the men I work with and the men I've worked with in the past, is that I managed to get them to understand Pilates because I explained to them what it will give them. Okay? Winning something or getting better at it or reducing the pain they feel.
Mm-hmm.
No back pain if they figure out how to use the body correctly. And the same goes for women. So once you get the conversation going about what Pilates can do for the golf game, which can be tricky because you lie on the floor doing exercises for most of the time. How do you stand up and then use the same efforts or techniques when you're hitting a golf ball? And that's why my Pilates became golf Pilates, because I wanted to make sure that people understood, how do I take my exercise from there or not exercising, the mental focus, the breathing, and then stand up and hit a ball?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, for me, was key. That's where all of my ideas came from to build my company. How to put those together.
In my case, I think I've tried it once before, and it was a good few years ago, but it's almost like, to anyone watching, it's like, just try it, just do it.
Do you remember any of the exercises? Do you remember anything?
No, vaguely. But now that you tell me that there's that relationship, or it derives from yoga, then I can see that. That's kind of what, because I've done yoga certainly more than I've done
it depends
Pilates.
A little bit where you're starting from. If you have a pretty flexible body, and most people come to Pilates and yoga because they have pain somewhere, right? Most people our age, let's say. So if you're already very mobile in your body and there's only maybe some things that you're looking at, yoga can be quite an easy way to get into that kind of movement. If you have any issues like stiff shoulders, stiff backs, and the abdominal muscles not supporting your back in movement, then Pilates is the better platform to start from. And I know some yoga people say, no, here, but it really much depends on where you start from. Mm-hmm. And I like both. Both are great. I try to separate them a bit so people understand the differences between the two. Mm-hmm. And Pilates is, you use more individual checks with people with Pilates so that you understand your body. And yoga session, you would probably be doing it with more people together and just going through a routine. Pilates is a little bit more specific. It's like going to your golf pro. Right, the golf pro will tell you, okay, I want you to turn your hip a little bit more. I want you to rotate your elbow a bit more. Mm, mm. Same thing is what you would get from a Pilates instructor.
Okay.
They will say, okay, you need to move a little bit that way. You're dropping that hip. You're doing something here that could change the way you do the exercise.
Mm. Interesting.
You need to start again now.
Yeah, I think so. Right. I feel like I should hold me accountable to that.
Yeah.
So in I'll however many weeks or months or... Yeah, not days, weeks. After today's podcast, you check in on me and say, have you tried it? Because again, I think with these things, a lot of the time we have to have a degree of, it's almost like blind faith, I would want to call it, because I think going back to the stories and the examples that you gave, like those guys who got to the foursomes final or whatever, again, like you don't actually know the value or the impact something's going to have on you until you try it, you do it, you sustain it, you're consistent, and then the results follow. But I think, you know, share something with you. There was a guy, again, another recent episode we did, episode 37, I think it was, with a PGA pro called James Watley, and he was saying to me over lunch afterwards, he said, in this context of people wanting shortcuts and things quickly these days, he was like, people want the Amazon Prime of golf instruction these
they
days.
Do. Yes, absolutely.
So they want to skip the hard work and the effort and just serve it up to me on a plate.
Yeah. It happens to us as well as instructors. I've had many times when I've had a client coming up and say, can you just give me the exercises? I was like, it doesn't work that way. So what I've learned to get past that issue is to give somebody, there are some exercises you can do that gives you a quick feeling of, oh, that makes a difference. Okay, feel the difference. So I've started to put in those kind of exercises. You will sense some kind of change. So I get your brain to follow me, right? That's all it is, right? I need to just to be able to follow the pattern I'm trying to create. When it comes to anything like this, we need to continue. We need about 5-10 sessions probably before you start feeling a change. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple of things that I give clients that are almost Pilates, but I call them golf Pilates because it's my idea of how to do it. Something like, you know, you're playing golf and you feel a pinch in your lower back. What do? Okay, you lift your knee up, hold onto a tree, and you just hold onto that knee and relax your back. Okay, using a bit of breathing technique, and suddenly your pain will disappear from your back just because you lifted the leg up. The second one would be just understanding your balance exercises. So if I'm saying to you, stand on one leg, how good are you going to be? How's your balance? Is it good?
Not great.
No. Okay. So I'll tell you to do it. Okay. And then you might just go a little bit wobbly. But then I tell you, take a step forward. Take a step forward and lift the other leg. Suddenly your brain goes, oh, it's a dynamic move. I need to move up, not sideways. And you can balance better.
Yeah.
So straight away giving you, within a minute or so, giving you a technique that helps you balance better. Mm. Which means you're suddenly following what I'm saying. Oh, Linda might be into something here. Okay. Onto something, sorry.
Yeah.
And then I can give you something else. You might not get the feeling of achieving something straight away, but I know it's going to make a difference for you. Yeah. But you know, I gave you a trick before, so maybe this is also good.
Yeah? Love it.
So we need to trick the brain a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're reminding me as well. I don't know if you ever have listened to the Chipping Forecast. It's like probably now one of the most popular golf podcasts in the UK. So Andrew Cotter, the commentator, Carter.
Yeah. Great guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ian does periodically talk about how he has fallen in love with Pilates and it's helped his golf. So I might share this episode with him and just say, so if it's good enough for Ian Carter, then I'm sure other people can follow suit. So,
and there's many more now. I remember sitting in, years ago now, in America, we were watching TV and golf, and I think Colin Montgomery was on TV and he said something about Pilates and how he's enjoying Pilates. I can't remember it exactly, but it was very fascinating.
That surprises
I said to my mom,
somehow.
Please record it. He's talking about Pilates.
Yeah.
But it's much more common now. There's more footballers and people that talk about it now. It didn't used to be like this.
Oh, totally. And I think it's a very good point, because equally just the other day, after Tommy Fleetwood won in India, he was quoted as talking about how he'd been using meditation to help him. And I just think role models like that, talking about these more kind of like holistic therapies or treatments or alternative, you know, like I say, things, kind of lends credibility and credence to them, I think, in a way, you know. So not that it necessarily should need that, but I just think the more, when you talked about Colin Montgomery there, it's just, it's great, you know. So the more we can advocate for these things.
And Tommy is great with this as well. He's got his own academy, fitness academy in Dubai. So I do follow the Victoria, who's, Victoria, great. She's really great at her job. And she's doing some really good stuff on Instagram too. So, cool. They have a team behind them too.
You and I were talking beforehand as well about how, you know, we find ourselves in a bit of a niche space, right?
Yes, like, totally.
How much do you believe this is just going to grow and grow? Like, do you see it growing beyond its, or do you think it'll always remain sort of niche?
I think we have in our industry, fitness industry, we do get what we call fads and people getting so stuck on things.
Yeah.
Pilates has been around for quite a while now. Same yoga, like long time.
Sure.
So it's always going to be there. What we noticed in the industry is that there's much more reformers out there now. You know, the machines that you pull, it's a carriage
where
you pull with straps, which has become like the go-to thing for people who start Pilates. I would say it's a great machinery. Just make sure your instructors know how to teach you how to do it. I like the mat ones, because when we play golf, we don't have straps hanging from straps, right? We play golf in space and we have to figure out where is our body in space. So I've always really liked doing stuff on a mat in different positions, maybe using resistance bands or weights. The reformer is great, but for me, it's always been like, I really love the fact that we have to use our body in space.
Can we talk a bit about resilience? It's one of my favorite subjects to talk about, because we have this tagline, golf yourself healthy, which is embrace the rough and cherish the fairway, built in that belief that in life, as in golf, we will find ourselves in difficult situations, or in the rough, in the long grass. And it's about, rather than just getting frustrated and thinking, I want to get out of there as soon as possible, what can you learn from adversity, and how can you sort of channel that adversity and then ultimately resilience as a trait or as a skill or as a behavior, whatever you want to call it, and sort of achieve great things. So, you know, to what extent would you say you're resilient, and what role has golf played in that, do you think?
I think golf gave me a good balance in life, you know, being outdoors more than anything else. When it comes to resilience, I think the COVID years were tough on instructors and anyone who's doing any instructions. Yeah. I lost my business on the 16th of March that year, and I had to...
2020.
All gone. So that year, I really had to figure out where is my strength coming from. And within a couple of days, me and my colleague had a studio, and I just set up a film studio, and we just started teaching online straight away, 2 days later. And I said, we just need to do this. We need to just get going and just try to find another way to find people. And we did, and we just continued from that. So that's, for me, one way of showing that I could change. That's what I said in the beginning. We started talking about change and being able to change quickly. So I think that's, for me, is that I have resilience to change. I'm not afraid of change. I left a corporate job, which was very good. I worked for both Callaway Golf for 11 years and the Financial Times. I remember the day when I left Financial Times, I could have been scared because I was just jumping straight into being just an instructor. But I remember the day very clearly. I turned around to 50, 60 people sitting in this open landscape, and they all waved at me. And I was like, yeah, I've done it. Okay, I feel okay with this change. So for me, that's also showing you can use things that's happened in the past. I haven't been made redundant from jobs before, you know, and that's a tough one on people. Mm-hmm. Like you really have to find your inner core, if I want to. Inner core, if you're made redundant. And I've seen a lot of people struggle with this. So for me, it was like, can I help these people? And I've tried to use my resilience to help other people. If it's teaching golf to women who are so scared of doing something wrong on the golf course, to teaching people who are afraid to lift their arms up because they've had frozen shoulders. They, you know, I had a lady crying because she couldn't lift her arm up. We got her arm moving in an hour and she was crying then too, but more of happiness. So I've tried to use what I've learned of being resilient to help others. The other thing with resilience is we need something, somewhere to get that resilience from, and exercise gives you endorphins. Yeah, golf does too, because you're walking around, right?
For sure.
You get maybe quicker endorphins if you're doing something like Pilates or yoga or some exercise routine, but golf gives you that too. So we go back to the fact that golf gives back. Mm-hmm. You're spending time outdoors, maybe talking to the trees. You're not doing that with somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
I do recommend that, you know, walking around trees is good. Maybe not a tree hugger, but it's good for our endorphins.
If that works for you.
Yeah. Maybe it works, you know. Yeah. It's good for endorphins because it's being out in nature. So that's a little bit of what I think resilience is for me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. The Financial Times example you gave there, I resonate quite a bit with that, both personally, and I'll share also another story. So just the other day, Lewis and I were interviewing a golf pro called Chris Cotton. So it's episode 40. I'll tell his story and his colleague's story first. So he was explaining how he has been a golf pro for about a year, and he has just returned to golf from the corporate world. So he basically, you know, started out, got county level, got very, very good, went to the States, did a scholarship, then wasn't good enough to make it, dropped out of golf, went into a corporate job and burnt out, and had a year and a half off work. And during that time was seeing a burnout coach and just kind of like discovering himself. And, you know, he's kind of gone, you know, he's gone back to golf and finding love in golf again. But there was another story that another one of his colleagues, who's also a golf pro, has been, who's only just taken it up recently, was a firefighter for years and years. Mm. And him and I were talking about how more in a redundancy situation so in my example, I've just gone through that. And I'm observing how there are some colleagues who had been telling me for months and months on end how unhappy they were. And how actually, if redundancy would come along, they would take it. They got offered it, and instead what they chose to do was reapply and get one of the other jobs that's been created in the new structure. And I cannot help but be left with the feeling that they didn't, they were too fearful of what laid on the other side of like the fear of the unknown. Like I know that one of my former colleagues, for example, was saying to me like, yeah, I love gardening. I want to go do landscape gardening and stuff. And I just kind of, you know, maybe he's happy doing what he's doing now in that new job that he's got. But I just think what you're talking about there is, you know, your version of resilience amongst other ways is like just face up to fear. Mm.
And somehow I think the fact that I've been in the golf industry for a long time, where there have been changes, really helped me understand that I didn't have to be fearful of that change. Mm. And it's, yeah, I really think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming from a golf background, being able to compete when I was young, all those things, you know, if you compete, you lose, right? You got to pick yourself up and come back again.
Yeah.
I think with, coming back to what golf and Pilates have done for me as well, which you know, I start thinking about when you just mentioned these things, is that it really created a community. We haven't really touched on the fact that golf and Pilates create a community, and I have this amazing group of people around me that's helped me take my company or what I want to do to the next level. And I keep coming back to the same people, and we have different stories now that we maybe had 5 years ago. Mm. And sometimes, you know, they disappear out of your life and then they come back again. So again, I don't think I would have that if I didn't have this golf background and also, you know, Pilates. So yeah, it's the community side of it is super important for resilience, because other people help you, you know, bring you up when you are low.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I think whilst it was clearly resilient to pivot during COVID, and you know, I find myself doing HIIT classes on Zoom.
I think
online.
We all did,
right? Yeah. But I think I've something else that coming out of this I can really, really relate to what you just said, okay? Mm. Because in my scenario of now wanting to grow Golf Yourself Healthy, make this a full-time endeavor, I've spent the last, basically since COVID, my job went online and stayed virtual. Everyone just worked from home more or less forevermore.
Yeah.
And I find that deeply isolating, and it's almost got worse and worse over time. And I've just kind of gone with it. And now I think what you've just said has made me think one of those amazing things that I love about golf is it generally forces you to be in person, like with people.
Yeah, I think this is the reason why we've chosen what we're doing. So why am I doing Pilates? I'm doing Pilates because it helps me bring my passion about, I'm not a PGA pro, and I used to love teaching people playing golf, but in the UK, you have to be a PGA pro to do that. So instead, I've been able to use my Pilates skills and show people how to move better with the golf swing so that they can work with their pro. So it's just using the skills that you have and trying to move them to where you feel like, okay, this is going to give me some more happiness to yourself as well. So it's very important to look after your own wellness, I think. It's so that's what Pilates has done for me, not just golf. The Pilates side has given me better posture, which means I feel better. People say to me, I look younger now than I did 10, 15 years ago working in an office, which is, you know, very nice of them to say. Mm-hmm. But I can feel the difference.
There's some, I think I've referenced it before on this podcast, but there was something I read in a golf magazine years ago where Bernard Langer said something about posture in relation to if you're having a bad round, or you've just walked off of one hole and you're walking to the next tee box and it's been a bad one, like walking or striding along will send something you said earlier about tricking your brain.
It is, yes.
You know, it's like making it think like, I've got this, it's okay. Like your posture sends a certain message.
It definitely does.
Right?
Yeah. So I work with a senior tour. So when I left my corporate job, I was lucky enough to get a job to work with a company that sponsored the senior tour. So I traveled around a little bit with the senior tour. It was very interesting to see these guys. And they are, when we're talking about posture and presence, they have more of it because they have experience, and you can see some of them and why they've become such great players in their time. So the senior tour players, when I work with them, they come from a time where posture maybe was a bit more important. We're getting into an era of very fast swings now, a lot of movement.
Yes.
Whereas they had probably a little bit more elegance in their swing, I would call it. But so
agreed.
I can tell from the players, because I've met Bernard Langer quite a few times. Yeah, he played a lot back then. And it's just different. It was different posture and different holding yourself in place. So yeah, so like I said, when I watch TV now, I can see when some of the younger players on tour, when they're using the swing, the powerful swing we have now, and I can say, okay, I can see that back is not going to hold up for this. And it's happened several times that I've noticed. And then a couple of months later, you hear about the person, like he had an injury.
Yeah.
Cope. So Pilates can really help for all levels of golfers.
They're almost going to be like that last generation of relatable players, if you get that point that you made about sort of like the elegance of their swings, because they grew up through that era of whereas now, like you say, like it's all about swing speed and how far can you hit it, and
it's almost impossible now to replicate what a tour player is doing. They spend so much time in the gym now that as an average player, you're better off looking at the women's swings, which are slightly slower, not much, because the women are getting very fast and powerful too, but the male tour player now is so far beyond us.
No, completely. And it's interesting. Well, Linda, how do my viewers and listeners check out, follow you? What things would you like us to include in the show notes to people to go check
out? Yeah, so I'm on YouTube as well. I have Instagram, so Pilates for Golf.
Yep.
YouTube is Linda Segerstam Golf Pilates. And then I have my own online work as well. So I do classes. I have a video library, lots of videos from everywhere I travel. I did one this morning in St. Pierre with the 18th hole behind me. So I got one of those.
I've seen it, by the way, folks. Yeah. Linda showed me the video and it's I just love a good view of a golf course out a window with it. The whole thing looked very serene.
I've done it at the open. I've done many where I've just tried to show where I am.
Yeah, it's cool.
Just because it gives us the connection to I'm doing the exercise for something, right? Yeah. Because it's tough to be motivated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. But I feel motivated after this conversation.
Oh, good.
To be honest, it's been a great one. Yeah. Linda, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And look forward to staying in touch and trying out Pilates a little bit more.
Hopefully. Sounds good.